Yeah, well, yeah, first podcast.
There you go.
Had a number of interviews and stuff, but this first podcast. Yeah. At least it's not live.
Last night, the fine folks at Brown-Forman invited us to taste the newest release of Old Forester's Whiskey Row Series, the 1920-style Prohibition, and the 2016 Old Forester Birthday Bourbon. The 1920 is a quote-unquote barrel-proof expression at 115 proof, which was good and had a spicy finish. The Old Forester Birthday Bourbon this year yielded 96 barrels, is bottled at around 96 or 97 proof, and aged as usual 12 years. This one is set to release in September to commemorate George Garvin Brown's birthday, the founder of Old Forester. You can see all the pictures from the event on our social media feeds, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. It was a really great show put on by Brown-Forman as well as the Fraser History Museum. We also did our July giveaway for Patreon sponsors this week, so make sure to listen all the way to the end to hear if you won. In addition, for this episode, there's an additional 25 minutes of bonus recording that didn't make it into the show, and you can only listen to it by supporting the show on Patreon.com. That's patreon.com/bourbonpursuit.
And we're back with another episode of the Bourbon Pursuit podcast. Kenny here, and I've got my co-host Matt Evans today. Matt, you doing all right?
Doing well, Kenny. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, so we're getting you on, getting your feet wet now, right? You're almost you're a pro at this point.
About knee deep at this point, yeah, Kenny.
But you know, we're doing something interesting today. It's yet another stop on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Have to give a shout out to Adam Johnson for getting me hooked up with our guest today, and we are not drinking bourbon at the moment, right? We're actually drinking beer because it's one of the only places on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail that you get to see not only bourbon, but beer being made as well. I think it's a pretty interesting thing.
So it's 2-for-1 special.
Yeah, so you get a little bit more bang for your buck when you do go visit here. And so I think that's a good intro for our guest today. So we have Mark Kaufman. Mark is the master distiller at Altec Brewing, or as many of you may better know, as the home of Town Branch Bourbon. So Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be with you guys today.
So I guess, did I get your title correct? Are you master distiller or also a master brewer?
Master distiller and chief engineer. So for the corporation.
There you go. So you get a little bit of a lot. And I think that's a better way to kind of start off is before we get into about you, before we get out the bourbon, talk about what Altec is, just so people aren't thinking like, oh, they have no idea what we're kind of setting the scenario here for.
Okay. Well, Altec started as a company in 1980 by Dr. Pierce Lyons. And he was here in the United States. He transferred over from England and Ireland to develop some business here in ethanol technologies, mostly for support for distilling, both for fuel ethanol and beverage alcohol. So he decided he'd go off on his own in 1980, and he developed Altec. In the early days of Altec, even when I came in 1986, most of our business, about 80% of it, was for the ethanol business. We sold a lot of yeast into the industry, a lot of enzymes, and some services that went into it. He also seen an opportunity there to diversify the company and take some of the peaks and valleys out of the market that the ethanol business has and diversify it into natural nutritional supplements for animals, mostly for performance animals. That'd be like cows, horses, poultry, aquaculture, and right now that's our core competency of the business itself. And we probably have sales in 128 countries around the world. Net revenues close to $4 billion, and now we've got 4,500 employees worldwide. But when I started in 1986, I was the 19th employee.
So give us the idea of the grander scale of what Town Branch and the brewery is to Altec in general, just so people understand that the size of Altec.
Okay, just to give you an idea, Altec, you know, is closing on $4 billion in sales, where the Lexan Brewing Distilling Company probably has revenues that's maybe 0.1% of that. So it's relatively small, and we happened across an opportunity to buy the Lexington Brewing Company in 1999 when they were closing their doors. It was a small little micro brewery at that time. They ran into some financial difficulties. So one thing led to another. Pierce decided to buy it. Funny story there, he had called me one Sunday afternoon while I was watching football in October. And he says, tomorrow, go on out to Lexan Brewing Company, take a look around. We might buy those tanks out there. You know, we're always needing tanks for whatever we're doing down here at headquarters. I said, okay, but can we do it this afternoon? I said, I'm heading to Mexico City in the morning. Be gone all week. He says, ah, let me call you back. One thing led to another. We ended up down here, both of us, looked around, and met with Bill Ambrose, one of the owners, and struck a deal that evening. We bought the brewery, all the equipment, had a bottling line from the 1940s, came out of Schindling Brewing Company. Mm-hmm. It was just the building across the way. We leased it because we didn't have any place to store the equipment. We had a lot going on at the time. So one thing led to another. We have an annual symposium every year. And that symposium is where we bring in nutritionists from around the world. And we said, shoot, we've got the brewery. We've got the experience on staff. We had a number of brewmasters from Dave Kelso, Mark Phipps, a number of guys that were in the business that were now on our ethanol side, and said, why don't we make beer for the symposium? So we did. It was well received. That was Kentucky Ale when we first started making it, and that was a jump start getting into the beer business.
Awesome. So let's kind of shift gears and talk about you for a second, right? So how did you come into Alltech, and then we'll talk about your lead in as into becoming master distiller, and if bourbon had any influence on your life before, you know, Alltech.
Okay. Well, I came into Alltech in 1986. They were looking to expand their maintenance department. My background is I grew up in Northwest Indiana. I was born in Gary. Lived 6 years in Des Moines, Iowa, Urbandale, Iowa, just outside of Des Moines, and went to trade school there for building trades. So, you know, getting out of college there in the early 80s, interest rates were through the roof, and needless to say, the building industry was non-existent. Very little was happening. So, took off, and my dad got me a job up in Chicago working with a research and development facility. And I picked up a lot of mechanical and electrical experience at that time there. Well, that led in to the experience leading into me getting a position at Alltech with my electrical background. So, hired on in July 1986, so you can add that up, 30 years this month I've been with the company. And
I think you're going to have a trophy on your desk.
Yeah, you'd think.
I'll drink a beer for you.
Drink a couple, yeah. Here's your six-pack. So, you know, I've been involved with most of the corporate expansions over the years. Then when the opportunity came up to buy the Lexan Brewing Company in 99, I've been involved with that purchase. I've been involved with the brewing of that operation. You know, but going back a little bit further back, I worked a lot with fermentation and designs and installations. In fermentation, if you're making lactic acid bacteria, you find out real fast what your sanitary standards are. So even though you're not tasting this bacteria, it doesn't take much for contamination to take over and it knocks out a whole batch. So having that experience for 6-7 years before we got into the brewery was a good stepping stone. Because as you know, having a brewery, you can't have contamination. So it was an easy transition at that point. To learn more of the brewing. And we offer a lot of classes. There's always a lot of education with Alltech, still is. We sponsor a number of MSc programs. We just started up one with Western Kentucky University, just opened up a small brewery there. So we're heavily invested in education, in furthering that. So, but me being involved from the brewery from day one was beneficial to where it's led into right now. Because once Pierce called me on a Sunday afternoon in February of 08, he says, Mark, I want to put two stills in the brewery. I says, okay, where? He says, don't worry about where. That's tomorrow's problem. So it's okay. So expect a call or something tomorrow from Richard Forsythe, because he happened to be in Scotland. He had met with him. So Richard calls me the next morning at 8 o'clock, and he says, Mark, he says, this is Richard. And I was talking to Pierce. He said, yeah, I know. Pierce called me and gave me an update yesterday. And he says, you'll have me a price. He said, about 8-10 months off for getting some stills. So he says, well, I was talking to the guys this morning, and he says, I said, Richard, we've got two stills sitting out back. Such and such hasn't paid on these stills for months. I said, they're basically ours to do what we want. So I said, Richard, what does that mean for us? He says, it means, Mark, you come up with a check and we can finish them up and we can have them over to you. I says, well, how soon can we get them? He says, we'll ship them out in 6 weeks. You hopefully have them the 1st of May. We did. We received them the 1st of May. We installed them that next 3 months in our brew house. And at that point, we got everything ready to start distilling September 1st of 08. That's how we got into the distilling business.
So did you have a lot of experience with bourbon before then, or was this kind of just like you get thrown to the wolves a little bit?
Well, I'd say you get thrown to the wolves, but that's what's unique about this company is that
they want you to kind of fail to succeed sort of thing.
Yeah, but we don't fail.
There you go. That's a good way to look at things.
Yeah, the opportunity was there. I mean, there's a lot of support. With that support from your peers and from the people in the industry, you can pull into that pretty easy. So I wouldn't say there's never a point of failure, but there isn't time to think about it, I guess is the key. Mm-hmm. You don't think about the failure. You don't think about what could go wrong. So you just jump in and you start doing it.
Did you look to anybody else within the bourbon industry for kind of initial guidance, or was this all kind of based on your own personal experience with bourbon?
Well, a lot of it was based on our own personal experience in the industry. And we have a lot of contacts all the way throughout. But most in Kentucky at the time, no one was doing pot stills. Right. And that's really where it gets a little bit more intriguing in what you have to do. With that, you know, fermentation's fermentation. As long as you're getting the grist the right size, all your mills cutting everything the right size, and since we're a lautering process, everything goes through the brew house, it's more critical to have that nice bed in there so you can filter out the sweet wort. So once you get that criteria done, fermentation, we're using our own yeast that we manufacture in Serbia at our yeast facility there. And it's a yeast that we've designed. It's specifically designed for distillers. That was straightforward, be able to do that. But when it came down to distilling itself, we did rely on some of our colleagues in Ireland, one fellow named Roy Court, another guy, Henry Cockburn from Scotland. They were very instrumental in tuning in the distillation process.
I think, you know, you'd already mentioned your stills, and I think it's worth talking about a little bit, right? Because most of the distillers we talk to, they get them. By the way, for anybody that doesn't know, Alltech and Town Branch is in Lexington, which is about an hour and a half down the road from Louisville. And most distilleries, they get their stills from Vendome, which is located right there in Louisville, the copper stills that everybody's kind of always talked about for years, but you didn't. So I guess kind of talk about the difference in the pot stills that you have that are imported directly from Scotland, and maybe some of the taste variants that you would get that would be different than what people else are doing.
Coming out of a column still, right, which is a different maintenance as well.
Yeah, they're far different birds altogether. Well, with the pot stills, you have some aspects into it that you're relying more on reflux from based on the design of the still itself. It could be the height of your swan's neck. It could be the pitch or diameter of your lion's arm before it gets the condensers. All those things factor in, and the more reflux you get back into it, creates more clearing or cleansing of the flavor profile. So in many aspects, a column still does that as you're going through the trays. As you're going, every tray you go up, you get more of that cleansing, more of that reflux, more of the material coming back down, clarifying this distillate that's going up through there, or the vapor going up through there. So there are a lot to it, but when you come to economies, you know, probably my opinion, 5,000 liter pot still is about as big as you want to get for a pot still, and still keep your cost down. Now, when you get beyond that, you really probably want to be going to a column still. Those costs become more attractive distilling at that point there. But you got an interesting story to tell you about the pot stills. You know, Pierce was in Scotland, and he had called me, said he met with Richard, wanted to see about some pot stills. By all means, he would rather seen about putting the stills in from a local company, but the stills were available. at Forsyth's. You know, we got them, you know, it was February, we received them May 1st, that's six weeks on the water.
That kind of turnaround time is kind of unheard of, right?
It was unheard of back in 2008, and it's not near as bad as it is right now. Now, granted, the fellows at Vendome weren't very happy about the decision that we made. And I understand that because we had worked with them for about 30 years at Vendome. Hmm. But when the opportunity came, when we decided to put a distillation system in Ireland in 2012, we reversed that.
Across seas, right?
Yeah. So we ordered some stills from Vendome, boom, shot them over to Ireland, and we're operating there. And since we've ordered some more stills with Vendome, too, on our new expansion that we're going to do in Pikeville, Kentucky.
Talk about that new expansion real quick before we dive into the next topic, since you brought that up.
Okay, we're looking at some emphasis into what we can do to help out Eastern Kentucky. Eastern Kentucky has been decimated by high unemployment, very little opportunity. So we thought, well, what would happen if we were one of the first people to go into Eastern Kentucky and put in a still, a distillation system, and a brewery, with more emphasis not only on the production and employment, but also to bring visitors in. As you bring visitors in, it helps support other businesses with your restaurants and hotels in the area, too. So that's where we started this about 2 years ago. Now we're well on our way. They've finished up the foundations. They're putting up steel right now. We're hoping it'll start up about early springtime next year. So we'll be open up in business. We'll be producing beer there, a number of different beers, similar to what we do here. Mostly it'd be for the local market there, but also we're still thinking about what ideas we might want to do with the distillation systems, if we want to do something more unique over there or carry on the same with some more bourbons. We're not sure yet.
Competing with the local moonshiners?
Yeah, well, it's a little tough to compete with the local moonshiners since we're having to pay taxes.
On the legal side of things.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I mean, infusing that economic life into that area would be a very huge boom for the locals.
And we're taking the first step, and we're hoping other companies will do the same thing. You know, you could look at something like what they've done in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, 40 years ago. You know, what it's turned out to be right now. Someone took that stuff and started expanding these other businesses that brought more tourism in. So we're hoping we can do the same thing in that area.
So I want to talk about the Town Branch name for a bit. Like, what was the idea behind the name, and what are the roots really behind it?
When we decided to put up the stills in our brewery, we had no idea what to call a bourbon once it came to maturity. Now, like I said, we started distilling in 08. Most of our distillate at that time was a malt whiskey. Similar to a scotch, like the Highland side, or a little bit of Irish, a little bit. But we also knew that we needed to have a bourbon, because this is the heart of bourbon country. And since we're producing one of the biggest selling beers in the area, is Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale, and we rely on all these fresh bourbon casks from a lot of the distilleries in the area, we needed to make that bourbon to support the business too. So it's a good excuse. So as things started to mature and we're getting closer to a point, in 2011, we said, you know, we have to come up with a name with this pretty soon. Now, going back, we're looking at some history of Lexington. Well, you know, what did they do? Well, here we are, a quarter mile from the distillery district, where at one time you had the largest bourbon manufacturer there at the Old Pepper Distillery, and then you had Old Tar Distillery, and all these were relying on a small waterway that Lexington was founded on. And this little waterway is called Town Branch. So in essence, we thought, well, this would be an ideal opportunity for us to put that founding water's name on our brand. So that's how it came to be.
That's a good little fact and tidbit that we actually, me and Matt, we're on the way here today, and you know, we had read that Town Branch was the first distillery to open from the old James E. Pepper Distillery back in 1958, and I was looking over and I was like, does that make sense? I was like, I thought it would have been Woodford. Woodford was there because I know that was the other old Pepper Distillery, and he had to get on his phone and look, and he was like, oh nope, that's the Oscar Pepper Distillery, not the old James E. Pepper. So yeah. We had to use Google a little bit.
What would we do without Google? I was surprised that this, being in Lexington, that it's the first distillery to open its doors since 1958. I would have thought that there would have been something along the way, but...
No, Lexington's been pretty sleepy in that aspect, and... You know, the craft beer movement started moving along slowly in the 1990s, really started to pick up a lot of steam in the last 10 years. I think there's 5 breweries now in town. Now there's at least 2, possibly a third distillery, small micro distillery in Lexington now too.
Well, as Kenny mentioned at the top of the show, one of the really cool, unique aspects of this here is that it's a brewery slash distillery. So how much crossover is there between the two in terms of grain use, in terms of resources, knowledge?
Well, it's unique in that if you look at both businesses, when you start from the raw material side all the way through the end of fermentation, they're very close to the same operation. We do use a lottering system, so we do use, when we're making our distilled spirits, we're using our brew house. The only thing on the brew house we don't use is the kettle. In the kettle, on the beer operation, you use that for evaporation, sterilization, and also your hop additions, where you don't have to have that for the whiskey operation. So we use that. That's shared equipment, and it's shared resources at that time. Also, with our Kentucky ale, we use a pale ale malt, malted barley. We use that same malted barley for our distilled spirits, too. You know, all 3 of our, both our rye, our bourbon, and our Pierce Lions Reserve. So there's a lot of those synergies. They work together. But then after fermentation, it's whether you go to filtration and carbonation for beer or you go on to distillation. So at that point, it's separate.
I guess during that period, are you guys tasting it and then maybe deciding like, oh, this is going to be beer, or this is going to be bourbon, or is it kind of like this is we already know exactly what's going to happen?
No, we know before we get started what we're going to be producing. Usually the cereal mixtures are quite different at that point. Now I have taken a beer that hasn't been quite up to quality, had a little bit off flavor, and we've distilled that. I don't know what we'll call it. A Kentucky ale beer spirit, I'm not sure, but well, we do have some couple of those in barrels right now. See how that turns out.
Well, and I think one distinct advantage you all have is when you dump your brown water, you take it right over to the brewery and put your bourbon barrel stout into that for extra aging. Is that correct?
On our when we're talking about the Kentucky bourbon barrel ale,
right?
Yeah, the bourbon barrel ale, once we were dumped with our bourbon, and we use our other distillers too, because we're going through nearly 1,000 barrels a week coming in and going out just to make Kentucky bourbon barrel ale. When we dump our bourbon, it goes right into the beer operation. We'll put our Kentucky ale into it. It's the same Kentucky ale that you drink right now in the bottle or on the keg. The only thing changes is after 6 weeks, it picks up those nice flavors. It picks up 2% more alcohol. All this was absorbed from what the Scots would call the end drink, what the liquid that's left still within the wood. Mm-hmm. And it absorbs that in it for 6 weeks. Then after it comes off of that, we filter it, carbonate it, and we bottle and keg it. Now, if we're making Pierce Lions Reserve, we'll use that barrel a third time. So the beer comes out of it. After that aging process, we'll give it a quick rinse. Then we'll put our malt whiskey into it for aging.
So I guess a good question, maybe you're a little bit biased, right? Because you got Ken Lee, who's the other master brewer and brewer manager here, and we had met one other individual who's also a master brewer. But in your opinion, what's more fun, beer or bourbon, when it comes to the making process?
That's a tough one. I have to honestly say it really depends on my mood.
It's like your kids. Which kid's your favorite? It depends on the mood.
It depends who hasn't made me mad that day.
That's right.
I enjoy a good beer, and I enjoy a good spirit. I like bourbon a lot. There are some days, if you're out mowing the lawn and it's hot, like this past weekend, I'm going to have a nice cold Kentucky Kolsch. It quenches a thirst nice.
so I guess that also kind of leads into some of the other jobs that you do, right? Because we had mentioned before we started recording is that you do a lot of travel as well. You know, you do a lot of cool things such as judging beer competitions. Kind of talk about that as just a perk of the job, or is that just kind of like, you know, it kind of just comes with the territory?
Well, it is a perk of the job. But I'll be honest, if you're tasting beer for 3 days, 8 hours a day, it does get a little bit old after about 6 hours, especially right now with the drive being with the IPAs. There's only so many IPAs you can sip on during the day. Now, granted, it's only 1 ounce that we're tasting, but when you add six or seven of these up every hour, it gets a little bit too much. But in all fairness, we're always cleaning our palate, always drinking a lot of water, so that we're giving forward the best judge for that beer possible. Because people, you know, all these are all from independent breweries. A lot of them from around the world are sending the beer in. And we want to be very fair with the judging on it. And by doing that, you need to always keep changing things. We always have groups of 20. We try to have groups of at least 20 people, and they're broken down in groups of 4 people most of the time. So everyone's not tasting the same beer at the same time. So if we're doing one sample, 2 tables might have it. A third or fourth table might not have it. They might have something totally different. But it is a nice perk of the job to be able to do a judging on the beers and taste the beers throughout the world. But I do a lot of travel. I spent 8 days in May going through Southeast Asia, had 3 stops in China, went to Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, Bangkok, Thailand, and had opportunity to go into southern Japan, and made a visit to Hiroshima, which is quite sobering.
Sure.
But that wasn't on the beer spirit side, that was on the feed side. We're looking at new opportunities for new businesses there and new buildings.
So I want to take it back just to the Town Branch just for a minute here. And I guess one thing we really forgot to talk about were all the different expressions that are inside of the Town Branch portfolio. So kind of talk about each one of those and what makes it unique compared to maybe your other competitors in the market.
Okay, well, our portfolio on our spirit side is, first one we came out with was Bluegrass Sundown. And that's an Irish coffee mix that we make ourselves. It's very similar to what you'd have as an Irish coffee mix, but with a bluegrass twist. We put bourbon in it.
So you have that for breakfast or dinner? When's...
Well, I always say it's always good to put in a coffee cup and take it to church on Sunday
there
morning.
There you go.
But no, it's a nice after dinner drink. It's a nice drink to have on a nice, cool, rainy day. It's served hot with some heavy whipping cream on top, so it's very nice.
What's the proof on that?
That only comes down to once you put the water into it and mix, it's about 7.5% alcohol. So it's not too bad at all. But that was a product Pierce had worked on when he was working for Irish distillers in the 70s. And he brought those ideas to refine and make a product for himself. Then after that, we have Pierce Lyons Reserve. Of course, that's our single malt whiskey. And we age that in our spent Kentucky bourbon barrel casks. It's got a nice malt flavor to it. It's got a little bit of sweetness, and I attribute some of that sweetness to the fresh barrels. I mean, this is going into a barrel. You can imagine that barrel is going to be a minimum 4 years. It could be 15 years old, depending on where we got it from. We use more than just our Town Branch bourbon, but we use some of the other local distilleries too with their bourbons too. So after our beers come out, we put this into it. It's got a real nice flavor, very comparable to a lot of Scotch and Irish whiskeys. So after that, we've got our Town Branch bourbon. And the Town Branch bourbon, it's 72% corn, 15% rye, and 13% malted barley. And then we have our Town Branch rye whiskey too. That's 55% rye, 30% corn, and 15% malted barley. And what's really unique on all these, they're all very flavorful, they're all unique. They hit their characteristic trait for their cereal, but they're all done on a double pot still, all 100% copper. They're not a hybrid, they're just a standard Scottish style pot still. And it really lends itself to those nice characters straight through them.
Well, is there anything coming down the pike as far as a single barrel or barrel proof or anything that's kind of hitting the markets lately?
We've got out. It's very limited supply. And that's a Town Branch bourbon, single barrel, and that's coming off at proof strength right off the barrel. All we do is take it out of the barrel, we put it through a small basket filter to remove the char, and we bottle it, straight like that. And then also, probably within the next month, we're going to have a Pierce Lyons Reserve single barrel also. It'd be the same criteria. So just take the char out of it.
Is there a big push for the barrel proof market that you're kind of seeing, that people are wanting that sort of cask strength?
There's a number of consumers out there that really want that. They want it where it's not been chill filtered. They can always put their own water into it that they feel fit to reduce it down. But there has been a pretty vocal demand to have this unique prog that's unique to your facility.
Right. Well, I mean, I think we've hit on a lot of different things here. You know, we've talked about all the expressions here. You've talked about the expansions that we're going through, or that you're going through, the new line of hopefully being able to see the single barrel cask strength hitting a local store near you. Other than that, what's the next few weeks look like for you? Because I know you're a busy man.
Yeah, this weekend I'm off to Boston, and this trip in the next 6 weeks, I've got a number of trips, mostly just going out, meeting with our salespeople, meeting with our distributors, then also having pairing dinners and talks in the evening, talking about our products to the general public for those areas.
Now, the roughest life ever, right?
How widely distributed is Town Branch?
Our spirits are in six states right now, but our beer is in 26 states. We have a tendency to follow our spirits following the beer market with where we are with distributors. And the only reason we haven't expanded the spirits out that fast is because we don't want to oversell and not being able to keep the product on the market. So, you know, sales have been great. It sure does make a number of us nervous to see the barrels dwindle, but we're also putting more barrels in. So we try to gauge that with opening new markets with what we have available coming down the line, so we can keep that shelf space out there.
I was about to say, I was like, how are you dealing for that next push in the market when people are going to be asking for more product, and you're like, well, we've got two stills, and before we started recording, you said that you're already running two 12-hour shifts. You're running 24 hours a day, unless by some odd mechanism the Earth's rotation slows down and we get more hours. But how are you going to be able to start forecasting for the next year or two and the demand that's going to be coming out, and how are you going to try to meet that demand?
Well, we are forecasting that right now. With the addition of Pikeville coming on here next spring, that'll pick up some of the load, even though it's going to be unique products for that area, but it will take care of some of the other load on the bourbon and the rye side. And we are putting together plans to see about what the possibilities are for another distillation system. So that's in the pipe work right now, and hopefully it'll materialize in the next few months.
Well, hopefully out of those billions, you only need maybe one-tenth of that billion to help increase everything right from Alltech. So I think what you guys have going on here is a real winning formula, right? And I think it's definitely an interesting thing, you know, coming here. This is my first time coming to Alltech and checking out Town Branch and actually drinking a beer for once, actually, during the podcast instead of drinking bourbon. It's a good, refreshing thing, especially when it's hitting the mid-90s outside. But I also, as we mentioned at the top of the show, that when you do come here, you get an opportunity to see both sides of it, right? You kind of get two birds with one stone. You get to see both sides of it. And not only that, is maybe there's a potential opportunity for other distillers to kind of see the winning formula that you all have done, and maybe that we'll see, I don't know, some other distillery come out with their own beer because all of a sudden you guys are doing something right. And it's easy, because I mean, maybe you can tell me if it's not easy, is being able to create a beer and being able to sell it relatively more soon than a bourbon per se, right? Because bourbon's got to age, it's got to do all those things, whereas a beer, it's a relatively more quick process, right?
The beer's a much quicker process. Basically, we use a rule of thumb. You could mill it and have it bottled and ready to ship out the door to your customers in 14 days. But what's critical, highly critical on beer, is quality. You have to have your quality assurance in place. Everyone's got to know and has to understand there's no shortcuts in cleaning. And if you can capture that and you could master that art right there, you're going to make a good quality beer.
Nobody wants to drink stank.
No. You don't get many sales off that.
Well, good. So, Mark, I just want to say thank you again for being on the show today. It was a pleasure not only coming here and knocking another distillery off our list, but also meeting you and understanding more about how bourbon and beer are really having a little of a happy marriage here.
Yep, thanks. I'm glad you guys came out.
Enjoyed sharing a drink with you.
Yep.
So, Matt, everybody, before I kind of close out, give everybody a plug about, again, who you are and how they can follow you.
Well, again, I'm kind of doing a spot start for Ryan here, and my social media handle is at Brownwater Guy. I'm a certified bourbon executive through the Stave and Thief Society, and just a bourbon enthusiast. So I'm really happy to be here with you, Kenny, and with you here, Mark, and appreciate the opportunity.
No, this has been good. It's been good. Always good to have another eye and angle on the things that maybe I forgot about or anything like that. But if you do like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to us on iTunes, follow us on all those great social media channels, support us on Patreon, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. We have all kinds of cool giveaways and things that which you can get for supporting the show. And if you have any show suggestions, people that you want us to interview, you want to send us a nasty email, fine, go ahead. It's theduo, theduo at bourbonpursuit.com. We take all your comments to heart, and with that, we will see you next time.
Hey everyone, this is Kenny from Bourbon Pursuit. We are doing our July giveaway. These are for everybody that supported us doing $5 or more on Patreon. We can't thank you enough for doing what you do and supporting us. It really helps us stay motivated for this show and keep going and hopefully give some stuff back to you all as well. You know, we try to take a little Kickstarter approach, like you just can't give and get nothing in return, but hopefully, you know, your name's drawn this time, so let's see what happens. So today we're going to be giving away two books. Our first book is going to be from Reed Mittenbuehler, Bourbon Empire, who's one of our past guests, and we also have More Kentucky Bourbon Cocktails, which is a follow-on from the last book, which was Kentucky Bourbon Cocktails. So our winner, number one, that's going to get chosen, gets to choose whichever book he or she wants, and then the second person gets the following book. So here we go. We're going to roll it five times. Who's ever number one and number two in the fifth roll are winners. So here we go. Number one, two, three, four, and for our winners, Jason Barrick and Tim Morris. Guys, I'll send you an email. I want to say, everybody, thank you again for supporting us. If you're not supporting us, please do. Patreon.com, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. And we're going to be giving away more stuff next month, as well as, of course, every podcast coming out every Friday. Y'all take care, and we'll see you next time. This podcast of Bourbon Pursuit is in partnership with thewhiskeywash.com, a lifestyle website for news and reviews for people who like whiskey. And for those who think a life without whiskey has no style, thewhiskeywash.com.